Good afternoon. It is 2 p.m. We are here today, July 19, 2017, in the OBA Hearing Room, Suite 907 of the DNA Building in Hagana, Guam, for the pre-hearing and motion hearing of OPAPA 17-007, Mega United Corp. versus the Guam Economic Development Authority. Presiding over the hearing today are Hearing Officer Anthony Camacho and Public Auditor Doris Flores Brooks. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Rodlyn Gerardo and Jarek Hernandez. Will Appellant Mega United please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
John Visosky, counsel for Mega United Corp. Limited, and along with President David Jiang, Mega United.
Thank you. Will Purchase.
How do you spell his name?
Your name? David?
Actually, you can call me David Zhang.
Z-H-A-N-G?
Yeah.
Z-H-C-A-Z? Z is in zebra.
H-A-N-G. Can we present close?
Okay. Z-H-A-N-G. So Z-H-A-N-G. All right, yeah. I just want to make sure that we get the spellings correct. Thank you very much. Please proceed.
Thank you. Will Purchasing Agency Gita please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Thomas Fisher. I am an attorney representing the Guam Economic Development Authority, the appellee in this matter, and I'm accompanied this afternoon by Mr. Larry Tovez as institutional representative.
And what is Mr. Tovez's position at GEDA?
What's your title, Larry?
I'm the Real Property Division Manager.
Thank you, Mr. Tovez.
Sure.
Thank you. We may proceed.
Okay, so pursuant to the notices that previously given out, and of course the notice of the rescheduling of this hearing from yesterday to today, we're going to proceed with the motion to dismiss first, followed by the the pre-hearing conference. So, as this is Gita's motion to dismiss. We're going to go in the following order. Mr. Fisher, I'm going to let you start your argument. Mr. Visosky will then give your opposition, if any. And of course, because this is your motion, Mr. Fisher, will let you reply thereafter or rebut. So, Mr. Fisher, you have the floor for your to argue your motion.
Thank you very much. Preparing for this afternoon's argument, of course, I went through the briefing on it. I also looked at the Pacific Rock case, and I was going to speak about Pacific Rock and its applicability to our motion, and it's got some, of course.
Now, you're referring to Pacific Rock 1 or 2?
Well, it would be Pacific Rock 2, but Pacific Rock 2 is essentially a gloss, I suppose, or an expansion of Pacific Rock 1. But then it occurred to me that what is before this body is really an interpretation of what it is that's being asked for in this appeal. And I don't know how much we really need to consider what's going on in Pacific Rock when we look at the language of Mega United's request. And I looked at the notice of appeal, and you know, paragraph 6 on page 3, as I've observed in the briefs, it says, Mega United requests that the OPA, the Office of Public Accountability, approve Mega United's request for adjustment of contract price due to prolonged delay in the amount of $460,681 in addition to attorney's fees and interest. The question is whether or not that is a request for money owed by the government of Guam. If it is a request for money owed by the government of Guam, I don't think there's any question that the Office of Public Accountability does not have jurisdiction over those sorts of requests. That is absolutely clear from the statute. So the public auditor is going to be making a determination of whether or not that is a request for money. I don't know another way to parse that other than to say that it is a request for money. There was an attempt, I think, in Mega United's opening brief to divorce the two concepts of money from liability for money, but no money would ever be awarded under any circumstance unless there was a a prior finding of liability. I don't know how you would make a request. Tell Government of Guam, give me $100 without also determining that Gov Guam owes the $100. I just don't see another way to, I just don't see a way to split this concept to say that this is not anything but a request for money. So that brings us around a little bit to Pacific Rock. And Pacific Rock, I think it's a bit of a difficult case, but the bottom line in it is it says that the procurement law is the final administrative step prior to filing a claim for money owed to government over in the Superior Court. I think that's basically the bottom line. But they refer to the statute, I think it's 5427A through F, and A through F is not an award of jurisdiction. That's also clear from Pacific Rock. Is not an award of jurisdiction to the Office of Public Accountability. It's just a description of what, under the procurement law, happens at the agency level. The procurement officer or designee gets to make the decision and the determination, and then accept or reject the claim. And then there's an additional step after that. And then if the agency hasn't made a decision after 60 days, they've constructively denied the claim. And that is the administrative action. But I'm going to be actually quite brief. I may have something more to say after Mr. Visosky talks, of course. But the question really before this body is this a claim on the government purse? And if it is, of course they have remedies. And it's over in the Superior Court. There's something they can do about it. There's no question about that. But it's just not within the ken of the public auditor to make the decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fisher. Mr. Visosky, on behalf of the appellant.
Yes, the distinction that Mr. Fisher describes correctly is whether this is having to do with money owed to or by the government of Guam versus pretty much anything else involving a breach of contract. So the legislature has given some guidance as to other matters which must be administratively appealed. So 5427, which was referenced, describes matters which must be appealed to the public auditor. So those matters include final decisions by the AG agency involving, without limitation, controversies based upon breach of contract, mistake, misrepresentation, or other cause for contract modification or rescission. So it's not a great distinction because many of those involve eventually money. Certainly a rescission of a contract, if perhaps work has been done or not, there's still going to be eventually, ultimately, money at issue. Nonetheless, a rescission, breach of contract claim, is a decision by the agency that must be administratively appealed. So just because that word money, which is a big, broad term, I concede, that does not mean anything that has anything to do with money ever is outside the public auditor's jurisdiction. So when 5427A says, contract modification, we submit that our request for a price adjustment is a contract modification. Yes, the modification involves money, it involves price. Eventually, the other distinction is whether the money is owed or not, and that's the language in 5703, I believe, that says the public auditor does not have jurisdiction over disputes having to do with money owed. And so the distinction I point out is that this adjustment of contract price is not yet money owed. Once the determination is made about how the price adjustment should be done, if at all, perhaps the auditor determines that there should be no adjustment of the contract price.
Well, I just have a quick question.
Yes.
So, but isn't the adjustment required, or your client is asking for this adjustment because of, I guess, a long period for payment?
I'm sorry, a long period for payment?
What's the basis for requesting the adjustment in contract price?
Yes, there was a delay on the part of the government resulting in changes in material cost to the contractor at the onset of the project.
So just general delay, not delay for payment?
Payment was not due at that time, correct? This was, at the very beginning of the contract, even before a notice, some of the delay before a notice was issued, notice to proceed. So
it's the notice to proceed. or the delay in producing or creating the notice to proceed is the basis for requesting an adjustment in contract price?
That's not all of the delay. There was a subsequent delay as well on the part of the government.
What were the causes of the other subsequent delay?
My client can speak to that better, if I may, because at this point I was focusing more on the issues as opposed to what I take to be an inquiry on the merits of the underlying claim. So if I could just consult with my client
sure.
about the various delays. So I think it's laid out in the notice of appeal. That's what I will refer to, if I may. There's a brief summary of the various delay issues.
All right, so, well, you don't have to, but you yes. articulate the cause for delay in your notice to appeal.
Correct.
All right.
And the supporting documents attached there, too.
And did you have anything else, Mr. Visosky?
Yes, I guess I will, since Pacific Rock was addressed, also address it briefly. In Pacific Rock, and I'll just quote from it, at the heart of this case is the determination of, quote, whether Pacific Rock's breach of contract claim seeking monetary damages was filed within the statute of limitations. So a breach of contract claim seeking monetary damages is a different kind of claim than what's at issue here. That is certainly a dispute about money owed to or by the government. That is the sort of claim that would fall outside the public auditor's jurisdiction as opposed to this determination of price adjustments. And I'll point out also that in the administrative regulations, 2 GAR section 9103B, which addresses 5427, 5 DCA 5427, the statute at issue here, Section 9103 of the Administrative Regulations explains that, discusses authority to resolve contract and breach of contract controversies. It expressly references 5 GCA 5427. And then it expands, the word controversy is meant to be broad and all-encompassing. It includes the full spectrum of disagreements from pricing of routine contract changes to claims of breach of contract. So that 2 GAR 9103 states clearly that pricing of routine contract changes fall within that 5 DCA 5427. Again, going back to 5427, that's the statute that explains contract modifications are something that must be administratively appealed. So similarly, pricing of routine contract changes must be administratively appealed. The agency said as much in its denial letter, of course. They avoid that issue in the briefing, but their denial letter expressly very clearly states that the contractor must administratively appeal to the public auditor, otherwise the decision is final. So everyone essentially asserted that position before, and now that we're actually here, the decision, the agency's decision is flip-flopped. Nonetheless, under 9103, pricing of routine contract changes clearly falls within the scope of the auditor's ability. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Fisher?
Yes, 54, the denial letter by no means is a concession by the agency that there is any jurisdiction in the Office of Public Auditor. What we merely did was cite to the law, and I think that we even just quoted it exactly, what 5427, I guess that would be D, Delta, says must happen. And we put in that was in the denial letter, but it is not a concession of jurisdiction. Even if it were a concession of jurisdiction, it would be ineffectual. We have no authority to award jurisdiction where the legislature has decided it doesn't exist. It's very clear that claims for money owed to or by the government of Guam are not properly before the Office of Public Auditor. And I would just reiterate that 5427, that entire statute is not a award of jurisdiction at all. It merely describes what happens. The final administrative remedy according to Pacific Rock, the final administrative remedy before they proceed to the Government Claims Act. I guess Pacific Rock 1, of course, that was a question of the statutes of limitation, but it left a kind of a fog in the interplay of the Procurement Act and the Claims Act that Pacific Rock 2 attempted to clear up. So which just brings us around again as to what is this claim? Is this a claim for money from the government of Guam? If not, it shouldn't be here. And I just can't imagine not being able to characterize a claim for money from the government of Guam as some sort of a contract breach. It's an exception which devours the rule. And I think it flies in the face of the plain language. And by just making this argument, by the way, on the nature of the claim made against us, I do not mean to waive our argument as to timeliness. We stand on that prior argument and state that it was not timely. I realized in my opening that I didn't speak to that. So if the OPA would like to give Mr. Visosky a chance to address that as well, I think that would be fair.
How specifically, now you state, how specifically, or how do you feel that the appeal here is untimely?
Well, I just looked at the 60 days plus the 60 days. The 60 days wouldn't apply. We say it's untimely because you have 60 days from an agency decision to appeal to the public auditor. And we say the appellant here received the agency decision about 63 days prior to filing their appeal, which puts it 3 days outside of the 60-day window. And Mega United's position, Mr. Visosky, I suppose will address it, is that they did not receive it at that time. We said that we sent it as an attachment to the facsimile. I think it was on April 13th. Their position is they didn't receive it, as I understand it, until April 17th, which puts them on the 60-day mark. And we say that it's actually on the 63rd day. In our reply brief, we also included letters, I think going back 2 years, from Mega United or their counsel raising the very same issue, which, if the public auditor comes down on the side of timeliness, then it will require a little bit of, reflection on what the nature was of the agency reply, as well as the demand, what those were. I don't know if you guys are good. I don't know if this body's going to go there, but I just wanted to, I wanted to make clear we're not waiving that argument.
Okay.
Having brought it up in our response to Mr. Visosky, he may well want to address it.
Before we go there, one question we have on our side here is, did GITA actually accept the project?
Accept the this was for the construction of the Farmers Cooperative in Edito. And you mean accept the project? In other words, the punch list was
it's done.
It's done. The punch list has been done.
I think so, yes. Oh, I see. I think part of, I'm not sure if it's
I think it was done
paid
for
retainage.
It has not been paid for entirely.
And I think that the claim for retainage is based on probably waiver of claim, right?
We haven't released
the contract. And Mega United hasn't released the claims yet, which was a contract requirement. Was it the claims? So there is an outstanding issue of retainage owed.
Is there a retainage that is owed, separate from what is being asked for?
It's included.
It's not included.
I think, okay, I'll rely on that then. It's separate, it's not within this appeal.
No, no, my question is more simply, is there still retainage owed?
Yes.
Yes.
There is still money in that.
Okay, and the reason for the separate from what he's asking from, you're saying there is retainage owed?
Yes, ma'am.
And what is the rationale for still having the retainage owed?
Can I just clarify that? I think that,
My question originally was.
There's money held as retainage.
Yes.
That has not yet been released to contractor.
Okay, and what is the reason for the non-release?
For the contract requirements, in order to release the retainage, we have to have a release of claims from the contractor. The contractor refused to do that, so we're still owing the retainage.
So from Gita's perspective though, is the project completed?
Project is completed.
So when did Gita or, because it's now, it's my understanding that the farmer's market's under the jurisdiction of the mayor of Debido, correct?
Not the mayor, partially. Facility is actually under the farmer's cooperative. It's run and managed by the farmer's cooperative.
Oh, by the farm.
The mayor, Mayor Zavarez, through an MOU with the farmer's cooperative, manages the flea market portion of that.
And the building portion is managed by?
The farmer's cooperative.
Okay, so between the mayor and the farmer's co-op, when did they officially accept it?
December 15th, 2016.
Okay, well, that's good, because my memory serves me right that it was not until December that the official ribbon cutting happened.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Do you have anything else to add?
No, thank you very much.
Mr. Visosky, do you have anything to say on the timeliness issue?
I did, and if I may also just briefly address the last point raised about 5427 not being a grant of jurisdiction to the public auditor. 5703 says public auditor shall have the power to review and determine any matter properly submitted to him or her, not money owed. So, power to review and determine any matter properly submitted, that's the jurisdictional grant. Any matter is a little broad. You do have to refer to other statutes to determine what other matters are properly submitted. So you do have to refer to 5427 to determine which matters are properly submitted to determine whether it's within the public auditor's jurisdiction or not. So 5427 doesn't say jurisdiction. That word's not in there. However, it is jurisdictional. How else do you determine whether a matter is properly submitted? You have to look to other statutes. So 5427 is jurisdictional when it says breach of contract, modification contract, jurisdictional. Turning to the timeliness issue, I think there is no dispute that the contract service requirements were not followed in terms of the final decision. So on the 60 days, and I quoted in the briefs, the various measures by which the parties agreed in the contract that service can be accomplished. And service includes a variety of matters or methods, from personal service, certified mail, return receipt requested, facsimile followed by confirmation of mail. And at some point it even says some other means providing evidence of a receipt. There is no evidence of a receipt here. They did not comply with any other expressly provided for means of service of that final decision. So it wasn't sent by, at the address stated below, first of all, it was never sent to Mega United, which is what is expressly required under the contract. Either by mail, personally delivered, or by facsimile, none of those were done. And confirmed by mail, yes, I did receive it on the 17th, untimely within that receipt by mail. Nonetheless, service by mail shall be by certified mail, return receipt requested, posted prepaid. So they didn't do that. There's no evidence whatsoever that there was any certified mailing, no receipt requested, no receipt of this alleged email, which I did not receive. So there is no dispute that contract service requirements were not complied with there was no service on the 10th or the 13th or whatever day they are arguing, service on the 17th, the appeal is timely. There was a brief mention in his reply brief regarding, there should have been, we didn't decide timely enough a year ago or something. And so you had 60 days, and we didn't respond initially within the 60 days. Therefore, that could have been deemed a denial by the deed by the contractor. Of course, that's a statute for the benefit of the contractor, and they aren't required to be held hostage by the agency's failure to respond. And they had the option for the contractor's benefit to treat a non-response as a denial. They did not. We requested a final decision in writing, very clear in the record. They very clearly responded within the 60 days. We very clearly appealed within the 60 days thereafter. Thank you.
And because it's still your motion and you raise the issue of timeliness during your first reply, do you want to address anything Mr. Visosky just said? Mr. Fisher, give me the last word.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I do appreciate that. I think we'll submit on the briefs.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we're going to take this motion to dismiss under advisement. We will be issuing a decision in writing, hopefully very soon. And so the next issue is if we proceed to a hearing, I believe the appellant has requested a hearing.
Correct.
Has Gita requested a hearing?
We have not.
All right, but they've requested a hearing. Therefore, assuming we don't grant the motion to dismiss, would the parties be available for a hearing on August the 29th?
I will be back on item the 25th. I think that's kind of a short time.
That's more than 30 days from today.
Right. I'm going to be off island from the 14th of August until the 25th. Then I may have an asserted trial that I found out about yesterday in the Superior Court that would begin no later than the second week of September. So we, on behalf of Gita, I'd actually like a little bit more time, but if...
we don't object to more time.
What date are you looking then, Mr. Fisher? If the party doesn't object.
Right, and thank you, Mr. Visosky. That trial in the Superior Court... in front of Judge La Morena, if it actually goes as it's scheduled to, I would anticipate lasting at least 2 weeks. It's the Shen Corporation case, and it's there are many, many feet of documents, so it's got to take some time if it goes. I would think if it starts the second week of September, it's going to take 2 weeks to complete over there.
We had proposed the 29th. How's the 5th?
Of September?
Yeah, before your trial starts.
Well, if I have to be ready, Gita will be ready. I may have to ask the court the body for a recess in the course of the hearing. I think this hearing will be much longer than
that. You want the 29th instead of the 5th. It's up to you, right?
Right.
Well, before your trial.
I think I prefer the 5th, actually.
It's the 4th of Labor Day.
Oh, okay.
We don't need that holiday. We can prepare.
So the 5th of September?
September.
I have a tax commission meeting in the morning, so let's make that mostly at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock. Starting.
Okay. All right. How many witnesses, Mr. Fisher, do you anticipate the purchasing agency is going to have?
Well, we don't anticipate stipulating any authenticity of any documents, so I think they're going to have to bring in. They're the appellant, so.
Let me ask General, how many witnesses do the parties anticipate calling?
if we're not going to stipulate the authenticity, I take that to mean that on price quotes and things like that, that they're going to require that we bring in the underlying parties.
Are you going to stipulate to the authenticity of the documents that you filed as a procurement record? Or are those in controversy? Because there's an issue if you're saying that this procurement record you're required by statute to keep is not authentic.
Well, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying I won't stipulate to the authenticity, and then you, this body, will have to make a decision on whether or not they're admissible. So.
It's okay. We're a little less formal than the court, and essentially as an administrative body. It is the purchasing agency's absolute duty to provide the procurement record.
Which we did.
All right. And now you're telling me that you're challenging the authenticity of the documents that you provided?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that it will be their decision on whether or not they want to introduce it into evidence. And if they want to introduce it into evidence...
Well, the entire procurement record is deemed part of the record of this proceeding as an administrative proceeding. Now, that doesn't mean that throughout the course of the proceeding, you can't say, I challenge the authenticity of this document or this specific document, but to say the entire procurement file.
Well, I don't know what he's introducing yet.
Okay. It's
a good idea what he's going to be introducing, but I don't know what that is yet, and I'm not prepared to stipulate.
We're not asking for a stipulation, but you kind of threw me back there when you're saying that we're not going to stipulate to any authenticity.
If I may, if we're talking about the supporting documents for the claim, right? Price changes and so the labor costs. So, it's not a question of authenticity in terms of those were submitted or not, right? They're in the record, so whatever's in the record was submitted. I think it's authentic in terms of. I think he's arguing.
And I got to warn you, Mr. Fisher, that the procurer or the agency has the absolute duty to keep a record of all the communications with this contractor.
I don't dispute that.
Okay. In any event, let's go back to the original. How many witnesses, Mr. Vasosky?
So I take it to mean there's going to perhaps be objections as to all the supporting documents that were submitted at the time in terms of price changes. Therefore, if we're required to bring all the witnesses who change prices, subcontractors who change prices, material suppliers who change prices, 5, 6, 7 people. If you can just tell me how many different suppliers change their prices. Just tell me approximately.
Doing that.
Just let me know how many. How many contractors.
There's there. Everything was.
You don't have to prove your whole case right now. I'm just trying to get a handle on how many witnesses. 5 to 10 witnesses. There we go. Okay.
Yeah, there's everything was there. So we just removed non-change. There's a lot of items non-change.
So approximately 5 to 10 witnesses. Mr. Fisher, how many witnesses do you anticipate calling, if any?
It's just going to be, again, we're the appellee. It's going to depend on how appellant puts their case on. We may have, 2 to 3, or we may prove up, or we may argue our case through their witnesses.
Okay, so potentially 13 witnesses.
Potentially.
And this would take at least 2 days, possibly 3 to try, if you actually called that many witnesses. So we're planning on beginning the hearing on September the 5th at 2. Okay, so we'll start at 2 p.m. on that day. And and for the other days, we probably go on the 6th and 7th at this time. If we're really going to call 13 witnesses, and they take approximately 3 days to try. And beyond that, I'm going to schedule the hearing materials or the dates to file the various, we witness list, your exhibit list.
If I may, you know, our motion is also a motion to stay, although we've only articulated two orders. One was the production of the agency report. We haven't got a reply yet, by the way.
No, but Mr. Fisher, this is an expedited proceeding, so if we do dismiss, we are going to try to get a written decision on your motion as quickly as possible, because this is an expedited proceeding.
And that's what I was going to ask for, because let's assume that you go against us and determine that you do have jurisdiction. You know, I'll be frank, this won't be a surprise to you. We may go to the Superior Court on a writ action.
Sure.
So, I mean, that's why what I was about to say is we were going to ask that any prospective step that you require of the litigants occur after a time when you
I'm still going to schedule.
Right, but I'm asking that in your scheduling order that that these sorts of steps occur after the decision.
No,
we don't want to concede jurisdiction.
Okay, well you've already challenged jurisdiction in your motion. Okay, but what you're really asking is a stay pending
the decision
resolution.
Yeah,
we are going to still schedule because this is an expedited proceeding, mm-hmm. and we're still going to schedule a hearing. We're still going to schedule the filing dates up to the hearing, and yes, we will try in all our power, okay, to get the decision before those dates run.
That's what I'm asking.
Okay, but I can't guarantee that.
Okay.
All right.
I understand that.
And I certainly, I will guarantee one thing, we're not going to issue a decision the day before the hearing or, you know, within a short time of the hearing.
Yeah.
Now the, and of course these dates will correspond with the September the 5th hearing date that we're going to give. All right, so just going down the list for the pre-hearing conference. Essentially, the parties tried to have discussions to formulate or simplify the issues in this matter.
We have nothing.
Okay,
that's the other thing I was broaching to the OPA. We haven't got a comment yet on the agency report. And then that will come from them, and then we will submit a rebuttal.
What is the time limit for that?
I think it's 10 to 14 days. I'm not sure.
When did they file their comment?
We have not filed our comment yet.
Okay.
Agency report was filed June 30th.
June 30th, okay.
It might have passed. I don't know.
The timeline may have passed already.
Yeah, for comment.
Yeah. So essentially, if the timeline's passed, that's a...
There were some intervening weekends, it's less than 11 days.
Okay. But if the timeline's passed, that's...
I understand. That's where you feel the need to request.
Unless you can stipulate to submit the comment, but that's up to Mr. Fisher if the timeline's actually passed, just whether or not he's going to permit that. But otherwise, yeah. We'd be limited to the agency report, and that's it. I know there's this issue about the authenticity of some of the documents raised by Mr. Fisher, but I do encourage the parties to start discussions at least to obtain admissions of facts and essentially authenticity of documents that you can't agree on. I can't imagine that the entire procurement file in this case is under challenge. Okay.
I don't know what they're going to introduce.
I understand that, but concerning these issues, or at the evidentiary or the record in this case. Do either of the parties require any advance rulings from me at this time?
On the...
The record.
I can't say.
I don't anticipate any. I guess I would like to briefly address the evidentiary standards, since that's kind of come up in terms of authenticity.
Sure.
I understand the rules of evidence not to be controlling on this body.
That's correct.
And so the standards are fairly wide open in terms of authenticity. It's really discretionary in terms of what the public auditor will consider, correct?
Well, yes and no.
In terms of the public, in terms of the record.
Well, the record here is usually the procurement record. And any additional evidence that you produce at the hearing. So generally the procurement record, because that is a record required by statute for the agency to keep, is considered part of the record here. So the parties don't have to admit anything in, generally speaking, anything in the procurement record. That said, if the parties are aware of something that's absolutely fraudulent or something that brings into question the authenticity of a document even it's in, the procurement record, that's what I was telling Mr. Fisher. Of course, you can always make that type of motion.
Here, a moment to consider.
Sure.
But the one thing that always of concern is
I believe it is. I did not bring the entire, but it was certainly in our notice of appeal.
Okay, all that stuff.
And I believe it's in your.
Okay.
I believe it's in your.
Okay, thank you.
Is that our notice of appeal? That big stack?
Yeah.
We'll work on those issues.
All right, and then
looks like contracts. But maybe let's look at it.
Okay. I also encourage parties to try to, in their discussions, avoid unnecessary proof and cumulative evidence. So I just encourage you in preparing your cases to do that. Part of the scheduling order in this matter will set timelines for the submission of witness lists and exhibit lists. Like I said, concerning the pending motion, we will try as best as we can to do that as soon as possible, and hopefully before any of these deadlines for the hearing come up. Do we need to adopt any special procedures for managing potentially difficult or complex issues?
I'm not aware of any.
All right. We already estimate this hearing might take about 3 days. Are there any other matters that I need to address at this time to facilitate the just, speedy, and inexpensive disposition of this action?
Nothing from the agency.
I know that the motion filing deadline was July the 14th. Were any other motions filed?
Yep.
All right.
And just for the record, the comments on the agency report is due 10 calendar days after the filing of the agency report. So in this case, the deadline would have been July 10th.
All right, July 10th. So that's it. The pleadings are closed. Unless you stipulate with Mr. Fisher to extend that time, but that's up to him. To your knowledge, does any person who's planning on attending the hearing require any kind of special accommodation or auxiliary aid or services to attend or participate in the hearing?
The agency's not aware of any.
No.
All right. Is there any other matter that we need to take up at this time?
No.
All right. So I'll also be issuing, along with the decision on the motion, a scheduling order setting forth these dates and timelines for the hearing in this matter. Thank you. We are adjourned.
We're off the record at 2:44 p.m.